Hello, I'm Tony Ryan in Adelaide, South Australia, with a series of interviews with contributors to New Male Studies, Volume 1, Issue 1, January 2012. This international journal is available online, www.newmalestudies.com. Meeting Men, Male Intimacy and College Men's Centres is the title of one of the papers in this first edition of New Male Studies, and my guest today is its author, Miles Groth, PhD, Professor of Psychology at Wagner College, Staten Island, New York. In addition to his recent interest in research on boyhood, fathers, and mentoring, Dr. Groth is also very much involved in the growth of men's groups on college and university campuses, and believes that these provide a safe space for an experience of genuine intimacy with other males at the tertiary level. I recorded this Skype interview in late 2011 with Dr. Miles Groth in New York.
Wagner College is located on Staten Island, which is one of the five boroughs of New York City, and it's about 3 miles out to sea, just south of Manhattan. The student population is just under 2,000, which makes it a certain characteristic kind of school with that population. Small liberal arts college, primarily residential. We have a few master's programs, but we're primarily designed to educate young men and women on the way to a bachelor's degree in one of the sciences, social sciences, humanities, or arts.
What are you seeing in terms of enrollments and the proportions of male and female students?
The trend over the last 10 to 12 years, I've been at Wagner nearly 20 years now, so perhaps the last 10 to 12 years, there has been a decline in the enrollment of men on Wagner campus. At first, we thought it perhaps had to do with a local trend, since we take many of our students from the Northeast. But as I began to look around and compare what was happening here to other schools, again, small liberal arts colleges, but then as I saw also larger universities, the enrollments of men have been declining nationwide, so that right now in the States, we are at about 40% on the average in 2011. 40% male, 60% female, which is an all-time low. Parity was reached in 1980. I did some checking, and many schools went co-ed in the 70s. And by 1980, it was about 50-50, which was all well and good. In the last 10 to 12 years, probably it started earlier, I'm going to say the mid-90s, didn't quite notice it, but the enrollments began to decline. So in some schools, it's as low as 33 to 37%, and I found this to be the case talking to our admissions dean just the other day, so that's quite recent. He, of course, keeps track of what's going on out of the schools. Why this is happening is a puzzle, and it's a concern, and for a number of reasons, which I could tell you something about. The idea that there are fewer males on campus is, first of all, not the reasons for this are not clear. So everyone's puzzling. Where are they? Because the population is still pretty much 50-50 male, female for the age group 18 to 21, 22. So where are they and what are they doing? Second question is, why aren't they going to school? Since now 70% of Americans will go to some sort of college, whether it be an associate community college, associate degree, or a full bachelor's degree, 70% of the whole nation, that's quite a lot. Then when you look at the proportion, you wonder, why aren't the guys going? We know that there is a trend, and someone has made a projection, which is, I don't think, going to play out, but statistically, you know how those graphs work and those projections work. Statistically, if the trend were to continue as it does now, and I surely hope it won't, the last male would be granted a bachelor's degree 25 years from now, which would be 2036. And that would be amazing and unprecedented. Compared to, say, when I was in college in the 60s, it was quite different then. It was about 80% men in school, tertiary education, and 20% female. But the big question now remains why they're not there. And I'm trying to puzzle that out, and so are some other people.
Well, I'm sure we'll touch on some of those issues during our interview. But what you've been saying leads me to ask about the men's center at Wagner College. You've been involved in setting up this center. Why was this initiative seen to be important for your college at this time?
About 6 years ago, 7 years ago, after I had noticed this trend, I looked around and saw that things were happening of a similar sort at other schools. And I happened on to a school in Minnesota, which is for your local listeners in what's called the Midwest, you know, so it's a kind of very conservative, quiet part of the United States. It's a Benedictine college, St. John's, and St. John's was at that time operating a center for men's leadership on campus to identify why students were not why male students were not engaged in on-campus activities. So I was in touch with the person who was doing that work and found out that he was looking for some money, which he found from the Lilly Endowment in the Midwest, to sponsor some pilot programs to investigate engagement of college men on campuses. So I applied for one of those grants. I took a student out to some meetings there at St. John's, and we became one of 10 schools around the country to instigate a college men's center, study group, conversation group for men on campus about men on campus. And in the process, we took the lead, as it turned out, because the fellow there at St. John's and I co-edited the book that covered the research over the pilot project term of 2 years. And he moved on to another school. The center at his school is in suspension for lack of funds. And Wagner then succeeded as being the center of college men studies in the United States. The centers are about creating a safe space for men on campus to sit down and talk about what in the world is going on, how they feel about being there, and whether they have any perception of changing attitudes on campus, and also to talk about great big issues like father-son relationships, what it's like for them as they think about possibly becoming a dad someday, what they want to do with their lives, just issues all over the place. So the centers have become that kind of setting for discussions, and I like to think of them as at the core of a center as being as a study group, but it also works, of course, as a place for the forming of relationships and for people to get to know each other.
What do we know about today's males in their late teens, especially as masculinity seems to be so often denigrated in our media and cultures?
I've been in higher education since 1972, and I've seen a major shift as the questions about gender have taken form, and in particular, watching good changes taking place for women on campuses. But at the same time, I've seen some really puzzling ideas forming in the minds of the guys on campus about just how they should behave, how they should appear to each other, in society at large, to the young women that they want to date. Most guys don't know who they should appear to be, and as a result, who they should be or think of themselves. The stalemate, this stasis, I guess I could say, is psychologically and emotionally paralyzing. They find themselves at odds about how to behave, and so it's up in the air as to what it is to be a good young man today. Lots of variations, you know, attempts to play that one role or another we read about in the press. But I would say at this point, the whole issue of masculinity for young men is one of puzzlement and bewilderment, mixed messages and uncertainty about who and what they should be.
So how does this affect their life in college?
On college campuses, my impression is, and this is work in progress, my impression is that at this point most men don't feel welcome on college campuses. Now that's a pretty stunning statement. Even if the numbers are still, let's say, look like the glass half full, 40%, if you're in that 40% and you're in a situation where at best people are tolerating your presence and at worst are somehow doubting that you should be there, and it doesn't feel right, it doesn't feel welcoming to you, you don't want to stay. So I think looking for reasons for the decline, I think a lot of students, a lot of young men are not coming to school as the word drifts down, or are leaving after the first year or the second year because they don't feel welcome. And I could give you one just quick example of what might be a major turnoff to an 18-year-old. Let's say this is a fellow who comes to Wagner. He's 18. He's been admitted as a freshman. And in the first 4 days on campus, he's required to attend a date rape seminar. Well, there he sits with 30 or 40 other guys and young women. And he's looking around and he's hearing about the dangers of this, and he's hearing statistics which may or not reflect anything in his experience, even things that he's heard in the news. But let's just say that he's pretty knowledgeable in general, and he may have heard of some awful things happening, but now he's sitting at college the first week before any classes, and he's, in a sense, being portrayed to other men, to himself, and to the young women on campus there with him as a danger. Well, I don't know. I think I would feel, as I get to know these guys, I can only imagine that when they sat there, they're looking around the room and wondering, who are they talking about? You know, I've never had such thoughts in my life. I've never, I don't know that I've even known anybody who's been involved in that kind of horrible thing. And so, but this has become mandatory on nearly all college campuses. And that's just one example, Tony, of the sort of thing that might happen to make a guy feel uncomfortable at best at the beginning and doubtful about whether he should be there at worst.
You're right, and you're just talking about college men feeling marginalized, and you attribute this in part to what you've called the toleration on campus of misandry. What is misandry, and why may this be so?
It's a term that's been around for a while, but it's taken on a very certain meaning in the last 7 to 8 years, perhaps a bit longer, in the writings of a few scholars. It's the systematic dislike. You might take it a degree further and say hatred of men. It's a parallel term is misogyny. That's been around a long time. But misandry is an attitude of an anti-male attitude. And we've been looking in our work on male studies at whether or not this is in fact the case culture-wide, and it seems to be in the media, in television, and the sorts of things that people watch, advertising. And it seemed to me, as I look at things now in curricula and on campuses, it seems to be a part of the ethos of campus life on life on college campuses. The hard evidence for men being the sorts of creatures who should be hated like that is not found. So the question is, how did it get to be there, and what can we do about bringing it to the surface, making it clear to people that there are misandric views, and how particularly it affects high school age, junior high, senior high school age, boys and men, and college men. It's not going to affect you and me. We've been around a while. We know who we are. We've seen changes in history. But if you're 14 or 16 or 18 and you're picking this up subtly or not so subtly in media, in advertising, and in school, it's going to produce some of that puzzlement that I talked about just a bit earlier, and I think these feelings of not being liked.
All of this, and particularly as I read your article in the first edition of New Male Studies, I started thinking about that whole business of loneliness or aloneness or even of alienation. I was actually reminded of a book that I warmed to very much over 40 years ago, and that was a book called Man Alone. I think that was in the politically correct days. I think man alone in that context stood for mankind. But it was, yes, about alienation in modern society. And I remember as a student 40 or 45 years ago, I think it was by Eric Josephson, and it was a text that I very much warmed to.
Yes, I think that this combination of marginalization, social marginalization, a misandric atmosphere, and remnants, pretty powerful remnants of what some have called hegemonic masculinity, a certain kind of masculinity that says you shouldn't ask any questions, you shouldn't, if you're a man, you shouldn't ask any questions, you shouldn't complain, even if your back hurts so much that you can't, you know, open the door, you shouldn't complain. If something's going on around you that's hurtful, you shouldn't complain. You shouldn't bring it up because, you know, men don't do that. These guys do need to say, this is what I'm experiencing, this is the way I'm feeling. Some people have compared this, interestingly enough, to the situation was for women in 1960s. And I think there's some validity to the comparison. In either case, it's not a good idea. It's not healthy, and it's not good for these guys. They do, as I get to know them, and I guess one of my skills in this life, I'm happy to have it, is that lots of them, not all of them, but a fair number of them talk to me, and some of them I get to know quite well, and I get to hear their stories and how things have gone for them. And that, often enough, in some young men's lives and some boys' lives, leads to self-destructive behavior, a lot of heavy drug use, which I think of in excess as self-destructive behavior, suicidal behavior. Or they don't go to class, or they've come there with a long history of having been given boy drugs, the famous Ritalin scandal that's now being exposed, by the way. I'm very glad to say that it's finally getting some attention. So a lot of them come having been deadened down pharmacologically. They've heard these stories about how awful they can be expected to be. They don't get much support. And they tell me these stories. And I find myself responding with something like the efforts that we're trying to sustain at Wagner now, which is to let them be heard and to talk to each other about what's going on, to take part in research that involves other guys, and we hope in the very near future to somehow ameliorate this. Yeah.
It did strike me in preparing for this interview, I came across the name given to the Men's Centre at the University of Portland, the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen. To me, that name projects a very positive and hope-filled image of young college men.
Absolutely, and I met some of the original members of this group. Pleasant guys, they're active, some are athletes, some are scholars, some are both. Many of them are involved in community activity. Many of them are involved in the spiritual, which in our culture, at least in the States, has kind of been downplayed. And I'm wondering if there's a correlation there. That's a whole dissertation to write about. But yeah, that's one really good example at Portland of the positive pro-male image that they promote of themselves, and it's heard on campus. So also at Gustavus Adolphus, and I'm not able to remember just now their slogan, but I think it's mentoring men for... Well, I'll find out and tell you. But it's another very positive self-portrayal. And so that's one of the things that these centers are doing that I think is really, really good. Well, actually, I found the name of that Portland, very, very positive Portland image that's portrayed there is also found at Gustavus Adolphus. Actually, I was there last spring to talk to the fellows in this group. But like the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, the Gustavus Adolphus group call themselves MPAC, the letter M, MPAC, because there are four M's in their self-presentation, Mentoring Men for Lives of Meaning and Making a Difference, MPAC. So it's, again, a very, very positive self-presentation of young males to the community at large and to themselves and to each other. I suspect that a lot of guys who hear about MPAC, for example, while they may not belong to the group, feel better because they see this group is there and being that they're represented as they are. So,
yes, indeed.